Okay. Maybe some of you have heard the introduction, but without the introduction, which is not very short, nothing would be very interesting. So, I mean, at least a necessary condition for the rest of the talk to be interesting is the introduction being interesting. Not at all sufficient, but... Okay. Rings and algebras of... rings and algebras in general, satisfying polynomial identities, have been studied seriously for almost a century, more than half a century, I should say. Okay. And it is surprising that some operator theorists and operator algebraists find that surprising to hear that, for example, the whole algebra of n by n matrices satisfies a polynomial identity. I was surprised myself several years ago when I first encountered these things. Just for those of you who have never thought about these things, just consider the simplest example of 2x2 matrices. If you take all 2x2 matrices, M2 of any F is okay, it doesn't have to be complex numbers. For most of our things, of course, C will be complex numbers. Am I speaking, is my voice different from, I hear it differently, yes? Oh, it's good, okay. No, I'm not, I wasn't talking about loudness, I was just talking about the musicality. So, consider, if you take any two operators there and consider the commutator, of course the trace of it is zero. So that means that it's either it is nilpotent or it is similar to alpha minus alpha, where alpha is not zero. And in either case, I'm not writing here because it is not very visible. So in either case, the square of it is scalar. So in either case, this is scalar in this 2x2 case. So it commutes with everything in sight. In particular, okay, so if, for example, this this is identically zero. Yes. Thank you. Yeah, please keep doing that. Okay. Okay. So, of course, you evolve. So, in other words, this polynomial xy minus yx squared z minus zxy minus yx squared is identically zero. But if you want two variables, I can give you two variables. For example, make this x. So this is identically zero on M2. Okay, of course, I can't give you one variable. Okay, so this is just a special case of these polynomials that have been known for half a century. Amitsur and Levitsky were two of the people who started a serious study of these things. I guess Kaplansky had studied them a little bit more, and Amitsur has a very nice expository article about in late 70s, and he says that Kaplansky wasn't the first one who talked about it. I don't remember who it was now. But anyway, Amitsur and Levitsky proved lots of polynomials, proved that lots of polynomials are identically zero on Mn. If you consider the so-called standard polynomial in M variables, so Fm in M non-commuting variables, this is just the determinant, the funny determinant, In other words, we just consider all permutations of these variables and put the obligatory sign of tau here, of course, and sum over all permutations. This is the standard polynomial of degree m in m non-commuting variables. Of course, this is actually multilinear. It is degree one in each of them. Okay, so one of the early theorems, I think by, I'm pretty sure, Amitzer and Levitsky proved that S2n is a polynomial, is an identity on Mn. Mn of AF, S2n of 2n variables is an identity. Okay? Now, I will be interested in two variables. So let me write a two variables. Again, I think it is Amitzer and Levitsky. In these variables, you just call the first one x and the next one xy and the next one xy squared and so on. You get a polynomial of polynomial in two variables. But there are some simpler polynomials than that that are known to be identically zero on Mn. Okay, I'll write one. Well, maybe I should put it here. I'll call it Fn, and Fn of x1, x, sorry, f, xy, and this is Sn plus 1, just go one more, and write x, xy, x squared y, x, ny. Do I get it right? Yes. Okay. So consider this. This is in two variables, two non-commuting variables. It's just this. This is n. S sub n plus 1 in those. So this is a polynomial in x and y. I'll call it fn. This is, oh, by the way, we can make it, make the degree one less, because everything has a y on the right-hand side when you write them. Oh, sorry. Everything has, yeah, you have to write them in this order each time, so everything has a x, actually, on the left-hand side. That's right. Everything has an x on the left-hand side, so you can divide it by x on the left-hand side. So maybe you should call that fn of x1, because it is what? Because I want it to be degree n in the first variable. What difference does it make? Yeah, okay. So basically, because this way, it is of degree n in x. Sorry, oh, that's right. That is what's happening. Okay, that's right. Okay. So I'll, yes. So I'll do it that way. Yeah, okay. So I'll make it xy squared. Yeah, thank you. That's better. And now I'll divide by x. Yeah, that's okay. Now it's okay. Yeah, now I divide by x. Okay, depending on how you write it, you have to divide by either x or y on the left or right. Okay, so this is certainly degree n in x and degree much more in y. And this is, again, Amitzer and Levitsky proved that Fn of AB is zero for all AB in Mn, this Fn, Mn of F. Okay? They proved more. They proved that the degree in each of the variables has to be at least n for something that's identically zero on Mn. The degree in each of the variables has to be at least n. Okay? And it is not known yet, at least it wasn't known until I asked Formanek about a year ago. I'll ask him again soon. But it is still not known what the minimal combined degree in X and Y is for MN? Is, in other words, what is the minimal degree polynomial, combined degree XY, that is identically zero on MN? Okay? Well, this is, this of course gives the bound, N in this and this much, but this is, if you go, if the degree is one of them is N, then it has to be sort of like this, but you can add a little bit to this and subtract it from this, and there are some results, but the problem is still unsolved. Okay, now let me just say one thing here. I'm going to talk about semigroups, but this being a workshop on non-central joint algebras, I have to do something about algebra here, but that's the, considering these things, excuse me. These remarks make it easy to answer the questions that I'll pose about the effect of polynomials being zero on semigroups and the effect of them as far as reducibility, having an invariant subspace is concerned, okay? By the way, since George is not here, he's not here, right? So by reducible, I mean no invariant subspaces. I am sorry for this definition, but it is so hard to say anything else. So a set of operators is reducible, unfortunately, means that it has an invariant subspace. Irreducible means it doesn't have an invariant subspace. I'm using the finite group representation theory terminology. Okay. Of course, triangularizable means that you have a maximal subspace chain. Such that every member is invariant under the operator. Okay. Let me just say one thing about algebra. So this, the fact that the degree cannot be less than n, gives you right away some easy theorems. If you have an algebra of compact operators, for example, you have a polynomial that is a polynomial that is zero on it, or even quadrennial potent. You don't have to pay much for considering polynomials, considering the definition, this definition. A polynomial is quadrennial potent, or a polynomial in the finite dimensional case, a polynomial is nilpotent on an algebra or on a semigroup. You don't lose much by doing that, right? This is more general. Okay? So, let's say you have a polynomial that is zero, let's just say zero right now, zero on a semigroup of compact operators. I'm going to go to semigroups later. I promised to say something about algebra. If you have an algebra of compact operators, say, and on the Banach space, and you have a polynomial that is identically zero on it. Okay? Now, it can be, excuse me, A can be reducible. A is reducible if and only if it is, its closure, of course, by Lomonosov lemma, is irreducible if and only if this is all, let me do H. Banach space, I have to do the closure of finite rank. So let me just do it on H. Okay? So by Lomonosov, this is, it is irreducible if and only if this is true. So if something is irreducible, if A is irreducible, then it has copies of MN of C for large enough N, and those won't satisfy this. So as soon as on an algebra, if you have any polynomial that is identical to zero on it, you get invariant subspaces, lots of them. As a matter of fact, you get between any two invariant subspaces, the gap will have to be less than n-dimensional if you have any polynomial of degree n in either x or y, and this is identically zero on an algebra, then that algebra will have lots of invariant subspaces. All these gaps would have to be finite dimensional. So the problem is not very interesting for algebra. Okay. On the other hand, if you consider Oh, let me see if I want to say anything more about algebras. I guess that's it. Okay, now I'll consider semi-Gödel operators. Of course, it is much easier for a polynomial to be identically zero on an irreducible semigroup than it is for it to be identically zero on an irreducible algebra. For example, if you just consider x squared y minus yx squared, so that you can write a semigroup that's irreducible on which this is identically zero. You just consider this simple eight-element semigroup. All elements. So consider this semigroup, eight elements, and the square of everything is either one or minus one. So it's square of everything coming just with everything else. So this is identically zero on this. And of course, you can jack it up, and you know, by taking the tensor products, you can make it irreducible on any finite dimensions. Of course, this particular, you cannot make it irreducible for a semigroup of compact operators, because if everything is quasi-important, then by Trotsky's theorem it is reducible. And if there is something that's not quasi-important, then square of it will be a non-zero compact operator commuting with everything. So you'll have commutant of an operator that is non-zero. So you can't, with this polynomial, you can't do it for compact operators, but you can do it, you can make the finite dimensions as big as you want irreducible, and it satisfies this identical. Okay. Oh, by the way, this is also nilpotent on, say, this, we take this semigroup. The semigroup, the very simple semigroup, if you don't want an invertible element, you can take the semigroup of zero and the basic matrices. This semigroup. That's x squared y minus yx squared. It is not zero on every pair, but it is important. Its square is zero. The square of it is zero. Okay. Now, more generally, now, a typical example of a group in n dimensions that is very useful is, I'll write it down and maybe I'll keep it, is these groups given two primes, not necessarily distinct. Okay? I'll take a group that looks like this. This is a very familiar group to many of you, but I'll write it again. So omega 1, omega 2, omega p, these are p by p matrices. This g is in mp of c, and this is a, and b is the cycle, and p by p, and this is a is non-scalar, and everything is a root of q. Q's root. So I'll call it GPQA. Okay, this is very important in the lemma that I'll present later. Okay, so if you take the group that is generated by these two, that is this group. Okay, now note in passing that P equals Q is very simple. That's an important group. But if P is not equal to Q, then it is just solvable. It's a solvable group, but not important. So that causes a lot of calculations. Later, when you want to test polynomials. Okay. So, yeah, I don't want to lose this, so I'll just... Oh, this is one of those things that can't be lifted. Oh, You should never use it. Oh, I see. Okay. That's right. Okay, well, okay, go on. Main question, of course, that I'm interested in is this. Before I write the question, maybe I should talk about it a little bit. Now, first of all, why not a polynomial in one variable? That is interesting, or not that interesting. Some cases are really interesting, but for example, bands have been studied where everything satisfies x squared equals x. And that is, or you can talk about semi groups of nilpotents and so on. So that's interesting, but that's not what I am interested in here. So I'm interested in two variables, and why not more than two variables? One thing, because I can't do it. It gets too complicated. And secondly, in most interesting cases, whenever you satisfy a polynomial of higher degree, you also satisfy a polynomial of in n variables where n is more than 2, you also satisfy a polynomial of in 2 variables in most interesting cases. Okay. Another thing that I'll consider is restriction is that I'll consider only homogeneous polynomials in x and y. Homogeneous in x and homogeneous in y, not just jointly. And many things are true for homogeneous in x and homogeneous in y. But again, the really interesting case is that when x and y, the degree in x and degree in y are the same. Otherwise, if the degree, the degrees in x and y are not the same, for example, you can get polynomials that kill irreducible groups of rank 1. Okay? So anyway, whenever I talk about any polynomial now, it will be in 2 variables, 2 non-commuting variables, and it will be homogeneous in x and in y, and I guess that's it. Now, again, why homogeneous? Of course, you can say something about non-homogeneous things too, but again, in the cases of interest, or in the cases, well, in the union of the cases of interest and the cases that I can do, it's good to have this homogeneity. Because most of my tricks use the assumption that if you have a semigroup, then you can multiply it by positive numbers and close it in norm, because I'll be concerned mostly with compact objects or in finite dimensions, for example. Okay? So if you have a homogeneous polynomial, of course, you don't have to assume it. It is, if something, if a semigroup satisfies a polynomial identity which is homogeneous, then of course the homogenization of the semigroup also satisfies that. And also in the compact case and finite dimensions, the closure satisfies that. Okay? So a homogeneous, F will be a homogeneous polynomial in 2 variables, and I won't repeat that statement anymore. So the question is this. What polynomials are, I'll write it down, which polynomials are reducing? Or better, triangularizing? By that I mean that if a polynomial is zero, or better, if it is quasi-nilpotent, okay, so let's call it F. F, say, is quasi-nilpotent on F, that means F of AB is quasi-nilpotent for all A and B in the semigroup S. S will be a semigroup in the rest of the talk. Okay, so if F is quasi-nilpotent on S, I want F to have this property. Then I'd like this to imply that F is has an invariant subspace, or better, triangular. So that is the question. So I'll stick to this because that is a much weaker assumption. F is quasi-important, that means this is quasi-important for all A. That's the definition. Okay, so probably the most well-known example of this xy minus yx, that is what studied all these things, the commutator. Of course, everybody knows that if this is zero, well, it is here quite clear right away that we shouldn't go to anything other than compact or any groups that contain compact operators, because for the general operators, this being zero on a semi-group doesn't, unfortunately, give you anything yet. Okay, so if you have finite dimensional operators or compact operators, if this is zero, of course you get an invariant subspace. Why do you get the invariant subspace? Because, it is commutative. Commutative semi-group of compact operators is triangularizable, actually. Okay, but maybe this is not so well known, that if this is quasi-important, again, this is triangularizing, in other words. If it is important or quasi-important on a semi-group compact operators, then you get S is triangularizable. Of course, reducibility is equivalent to triangularizability, because if you get reducibility, then in each of the quotient places, again, it satisfies the polynomial, so you get more and more and more. Okay, so this Victor Shulman and Peter Rosenthal and I did this a few years ago, but then we found out that Guralnik had done it 18 years before, at least in finite dimensional case. And that was the second time that he did that to me. Before that, I did something, and then it turned out that he had done it in 21 years before. So I am improving. especially if I consider the fact that the first year I was here in 67 at the University of Toronto, I submitted something and got refereed and published, reviewed and everything, but then somebody sent me, I was going to say email, but no, send me regular mail. And he said that Frobenius did it in 1912. So the gap there was 50 years, and so I'm improving. So that's one case. I'll give some more general things than that. Okay. So I guess maybe I'll show you some okay. I'll show you some slides. Okay, so I can keep it, maybe. Well, anyway, so everybody has memorized this, right? Yeah, this is not 10, by the way. This is 1 and 0. Okay, that's the definition I just told you. Okay, so we want to get some theorems like that. If a polynomial is quasi-important on a semigroup of operators containing a compact operator, or let's just say compact operators, a semigroup of compact operators, then it is triangularizable or reducible. So this is one of the main lemmas. It is if F is quasi-important on an irreducible semigroup of compact operators or contains an non-zero operator, then either, see, that is the main lemma to split it into two possible cases. It is either important on 2 by 2 semigroup of singular operators. Singular just means rank 1 or 0. If I said rank 1, I would be wrong, because rank zero is also there, maybe, sometimes. Okay? So it is either F is nilpotent on a singular 2 by 2 semigroup, or it is nilpotent on one of those finite groups behind the curtain. Okay? So it reduces the problem to considering just a semigroup of 2 by 2s, which I'll talk about in a moment, or a very easy finite group that is either very, very nice, important, or a PQ group, a simple PQ group. Okay. So that's the reduction. To do that, you need this lemma. See, this is even in finite. Okay, so there is some fine print there, which is not very, very fine. In either in infinite dimensional compact semigroup of compact operators in infinite dimensions, or if the dimension is infinite, don't take it all invertible. If there is at least one non-invertible element in the semigroup, that is the assumption. One non-zero, non-invertible element in the semigroup. If you have that, then this homogeneity and closure assumption, then the semigroup contains in a natural way a 2 by 2 singular semigroup that I was talking about. So, in other words, of course, you're assuming it is irreducible, no invariant subspaces. As soon as it has one non-invertible element, in particular compact operators, then it has a sub-semigroup which has a zero, which has a couple of members as a semigroup that has this block triangularization, where these things are 2 by 2, and everything is singular there, and irreducible. So you want to put, you want to get a semi-invariant subspace such that the induced semigroup by one of the sub-semigroups has this 2 by 2 singular irreducible semigroup there. Say? Why what? I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Oh, no, that is a mistake. I'm sorry, thank you. Thank you for listening. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that would be stupid. I do all kinds of stupid things. Okay, so yes, okay. So see, the thing is that I want an induced place where you have a singular irreducible 2 by 2 semigroup. Okay, so that is I'm not satisfied with my proof of that, because it's very long, and I certainly won't subject you to it. It's very impolite to do so. Okay. Now, so we know what happens with those. The study of those questions is reduced to two things. One, what polynomials are zero on irreducible singular 2 by 2s? That means this, or the finite groups I was talking about. So look at this. This is, of course, This is simple. This is a very simple lemma. There's no lemma here, sorry. This is a definition. I'll tell you what the simple lemma is later. Okay? This is a definition. And we call a... I'll give you the easy lemma now. That thing, the easy lemma is this. I didn't even write it down. The easy lemma is this. This thing, an irreducible 2x2, looks like this. There are numbers alpha and beta, so that alpha beta is not 1. If it is 1, then that thing is not irreducible. Okay? And this is the semigroup generated by these two. Okay? So that is the very easy lemma. And it is just as easy to see that that can happen in three different ways. And I prefer these because, I mean, the proofs, you just get these. Or sometimes, this is the, there are very different cases. And these exhaustive. Okay? Either you have, you know, the semigroup generated by this is just the semigroup of basic matrices, those five elements I wrote. So this is a very easy one. This is also easy. This also has five elements. So two nilpotents, generated by two nilpotents, irreducible. Generated by one nilpotent and one idempotent, irreducible. And generated by two idempotents. Those are the only possible cases. But I mean, that's an easy thing. Except that, this is a very small, five elements, but this could be infinite, of course, depending on the value of t, this could be infinite. Okay? Now, the reason I split it, because sometimes I don't need the full force of rigidity. It doesn't have to, so for some results, the polynomial doesn't have to be thoroughgoingly rigid. So, and since this is hard to deal with, in lots of cases of interest, those are enough. So that's why I'm splitting them. So these are different cases. As I said before, and it is worth repeating, I guess, so my general problem that I stated there is reduced to checking a polynomial against two things. This kind of thing, or these things if you don't like two parameters. Checking it against these, and checking it against those finite groups. Okay? So, since although it is computational, I am not going to show you the proofs, but it is, I have necessary and sufficient conditions for a polynomial to be identically zero on this. I have also necessary assumption conditions for this and this, and these are just in terms of the coefficients, of course. You know, the coefficients of polynomials, what should they be in order for it to satisfy this? And those are necessary and sufficient. And those are easy, although the statements are longer than the applications. In practice, you can easily check. Maybe if I have time, I'll just check a polynomial for you and prove that it's rigid. Okay? So that's easy. It is the other thing that is not always easy. The group case. What am I doing here? Okay, so this is something that in the algebra case was easy, but here you have to use this. Okay, you have to use rigidity. Okay, so if you have a semigroup compact operator on Banach space, and a rigid polynomial is quasi-nilpotent on it, then it has a Black triangulation where that's the thing. So it has the block triangulation, and every block, I shouldn't have erased that. I erased it because this block was 2x2, and I want to make it bigger. That's why I erased it. Okay. So I no zeros here. So it has other things, but you just consider one of these places. Every one of these chain of invariant subspaces, this thing is just essentially a finite group. That is what I mean by essentially a finite group. That is, it is finite modulo its center. So the irreducible blocks are all essentially finite groups. Okay? Of course, in finite dimensions, in finite dimensions, this doesn't mean much because the whole thing could be just a finite group. But at least you know that it's a finite group. Start with any semigroup in finite dimensions, for example, and if it is irreducible and the rigid polynomial is identically zero on it, then it is a group, modulo its center. A finite group, modulo its center. Sorry. Okay. I know I haven't given you any examples, but I'll give an example. Okay. Now, here is something that... Okay. Now, here is something to avoid, as I said, and maybe I should repeat once more, that checking those conditions, in the case of P equals Q is easy, because the group is very nice, important. But in the case P is not equal to Q, my recipe is so bad that it is better just to check. I won't give you any recipes there, okay? But here is something where, you know, this avoids that, and this is a generalization of that xy minus yx business, you know, that commutative business, okay? So if you have if f is a rigid polynomial but is of this form, g of xy and yx, then the condition, big condition is just this, that when you put make it commutative, g of t and 1 is not divisible by any t to the power p minus 1 for any prime p. One of the primes disappears, and it becomes very easy to check. Okay, here's an example. I told you I'll give you an example. Just a simple example. So if this thing is, in other words, is triangularized, because it is certainly a function of x, y, and y, x, and it is not hard to check. Unfortunately, I chose a simple example because I can just check it against this. So you can take my word for it that, you know, that no matter what alpha, beta are, so that this is not 1, then the semigroup generated by this is not killed by any power of it. Of course, you only have to go to the second power. So this is not nilpotent on those things. So the rigidity, so it needs checking. But the rest is in this seal, that it is not divisible if you... Okay. Oh, by the way, the interesting case is when A plus B is minus 1, by the way. That is the case that should be checked. Because if A plus B is minus 1, that means if the coefficients add up to... don't add up to 0... I should have said that when I was confining myself to two variables and homogeneity, I should have said that too. If the coefficients don't add up to 0, it's very easy. Because that means you put x equal to y, so you get that everything is quasi-nilpotent in the same group. Done. So the interesting case is when the coefficients do add up to 0. Okay, so the interesting case is where 1 plus a plus b is equal to 0, and then you see that it doesn't, it is not divisible by t squared minus 1. And so this is, for example, a polynomial. There are lots of polynomials that you can write, a function of x, y, and y, x, including x, y minus y, x, that give you this. Okay. Now, as I said, you can get rid of the... You don't have to use the full force of rigidity. You can use just a part of it, and so on. So, okay, here is just a vestige of rigidity here. It's really only the part one. Anyway, but I am not assuming rigid here. So let f be any homogeneous polynomial of the form ux, y, x, such that the commutative version of it, g of t1, is not divisible by t to the power p minus 1. For any prime, then every maximal irreducible semigroup on which f is quasi-nilpotent contains rank 1 operators. In other words, you just have to check it for rank one operators. Okay? And a corollary of that is this. Let G be a polynomial where G of T1 is not divisible by T to the power P minus 1 for any prime P. And this is my economical way of writing that G of 1, 0 and G of 0, 1 are not both 0. I didn't know how to write it in a small space, and this is the way to write it. It's terrible, isn't it? That's just to say that G of 1, 0 and G of 0, 1 are not both 0. That eliminates the first type of the singular 2 by 2 irreducibles. That's all it eliminates. The other ones are not important for this one. You don't need them. They don't happen. Okay? So if you have on a compact group, you have this, for example, this is just a special case. In a compact group, then it has to be abelian, for example. Okay. I think I'll stop there, because otherwise I'll just have to get into longer things.
Thank you.